And Rick had told me before we met, he's like, the president's a deal maker. He's not a regular politician. You need to make a big ask and don't be afraid to make it. I think if you come to our convention.
Hello, Bitcoiners. Thank you very much.
And you walk out on stage and you say, you're going to free Ross Ulbricht. Everybody will lose their minds. They will vote for him.
Anywhere in the world.
And he went, who's Ross Ulbricht? We want to see him in the Fed. But he can't do that. Like, it's not possible. That's an act of Congress.
Is that a little frightening that he just didn't know who he was, though? I mean, with all of this, you know,
he said, I love freeing people. I'll walk out on stage and I'll say, free Ross Ulbricht, mic drop. Like, it was that easy. And then later in the conversation, he's like, oh, I think I do remember him. I think he was in a list of pardons that was supposed to make it to my desk the last day that I was in office. You have to sort of defend your right to disengage, because places like the Southern District of New York, I think it's really about control. And if they can't control you financially, I know that so many people are so politically fatigued. Don't just throw in the towel. Take a little break, you know, take a breather, but don't throw in the towel, because we just started winning.
What's up, guys? 70,000 of you guys keep coming back every single month, but 71% are not subscribed. So you're going to miss out on some of the great Green Candle content. So make sure that you're hitting that subscribe button with the bell notification so you get notified every time I drop a video. All right, now let's get back into this great interview. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the legend Angela McArdle in the house, who has helped Ross Ulbricht be pardoned. But we've got a big case coming up in the next 3 days, or a big decision to be made, pardon. Ironically, using the word pardon here, with the Samurai wallet developers who are pushing for that pardon, who unfortunately are sentenced to go to jail in the next 3 days. But Angela, with all of this stuff going around, I got to ask, depending on the decision that's made, how big of a decision do you think this is, just for Bitcoiners in general and for free speech? Do you view that this is almost like code is being looked at as not as an extension of the First Amendment initially, if the Samurai wallet developers are not pardoned here in the next few days?
I mean, I think that's the big debate, you know, and I don't know if people in the administration have viewed it that way, because I don't know how closely they are really looking at the details, you know, from that perspective, but they understand the significance of it, at least for the Bitcoin community.
Yeah, and it seems like they've been very forward with the, you know, Bitcoin community. Obviously, mm-hmm. Trump came and spoke at the conference, and J.D. Vance spoke at it within this past year as well. So a lot of political influence. Yeah. How important do they see, you know, the Bitcoin community in general, just, you know, somewhat having their back through this, you know, entire administration, and especially with like the midterm elections coming up next year?
Every like half a percentage of a vote counts. So, you know, the issue coalition that they built in 23 through 24 is just incredibly important. They understand that. They know that the Bitcoin, Libertarian, MAHA voting blocks, like, if we don't turn out, they're totally hosed. And I think that they already suspect they're going to lose Congress. That's something that happens, you know, pretty normally in midterms anyway. But, you know, like, they can't lose the Senate. They cannot afford to lose the Senate. And so they need as much voter turnout as possible from Bitcoiners.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, there has been a little bit of, I guess, disappointment with the way that things have been developing. You know, I guess we got promised a Bitcoin strategic reserve. There hasn't been any Bitcoin buying, but they did pardon Ross Ulbricht. So there has been a lot of, positives in this space. You know, overall, how are you viewing this administration right now? I mean, obviously you're a little bit closer into it, all of it. So have Bitcoiners just been, I guess, unrealistic with some of the expectations going into this administration? Or, you know, I guess, how have you viewed this whole thing sort of playing out with the connection between the two?
I think that things are happening more slowly in the administration than anybody wants, including the administration. And I mean, I can tell you, you know, like when I came in as chair of the National Libertarian Party, I essentially did a hostile takeover, which is like what the Trump administration is doing. And it was really difficult for me with a staff of like 13 people to figure out who's treacherous, who's neutral, who's on my side, who's hiding data, who's stealing things, who's like, it was really wild. Imagine that on the national level where you have hundreds of thousands of employees. Like, I know that they want to stick to all their promises and, you know, make people happy. But I think the pace at which they're able to do that is something, you know, that they might have underestimated.
Yeah. And I hear you. I think it's interesting too, especially with the way that, you know, this whole Trump administration has come about. Obviously it's his second term, but he had 4 years to sit on it. So what have you been seeing, like the true differences kind of between the two, yeah, I guess, terms before them? And then, what are some of the main differences you're seeing just with this, I guess, 4 year hiatus he had in between?
Well, the coalition building is like the thing that jumps out at me the most. You know, the president literally reaching out to me to try to get libertarian votes, you know, building bridges, you know, pardoning Ross Ulbricht, committing to that publicly, working with Kennedy. Like, they understand that they need a broad coalition to make this stuff happen. And then I think there's also a lot less naivety. You know, Kash Patel had a really good book and like mini documentary about it called Government Gangsters, where they show all the people who basically like didn't just like betray, but like stabbed President Trump in the back during his first administration, because they don't, so many of these people, these career feds, they don't care about America. Like, they care about their jobs. They kind of buy into this global democracy thing, which is a very nice way of phrasing whatever they're doing. And I think that President Trump, like, he gets that now. And so he's more like on the alert and watchful for it. And I think that's also why things have maybe gone a little bit more slowly than those of us on the outside would hope, is because they have to be so careful.
Yeah. So let's talk about, I guess some of the things that have been done. You know, obviously you were very close with the pardoning of Ross Ulbricht. I guess take me through some of that process and shed some light on, you know, how that came about. And, that obviously is a major success story from the, you know, the Libertarian Party. Bitcoiners got all behind it as well. You know, it seems like it's a big step forward for just, you know, freedom of speech as code, I guess, in a sense here. So take us through some of that experience and tell us a little bit about what happened and how that came all about.
Okay. So, you know, I was just at home one morning and I wake up and I have a text message from Rick Grenell, the former acting director of national security under Trump's first term and later the ambassador to Germany, who's like, "Oh, hi, Angela. I got your number from a mutual friend. I'd love to know what you think about President Trump. I'm a friend of his, you know, and just trying to help him out and build some bridges." So, you know, that was a lot. I had some coffee first before I responded to him. And it was early in the morning. And, I did this thing that libertarians don't always do, which is I was diplomatic in my response, you know. So I called Rick and I'm like, "Well, you know, the libertarians really love that he didn't start any new wars. I'm not really crazy about the Soleimani drone strikes thing. And we're very sympathetic to him for the lawfare that he's experienced. And we really hope that he wins because it's gross and wrong." And I think that was like a really important answer for me to give because, you know, Rick liked that. We continued talking. He met with my husband and I like just a couple of weeks later. He flew out to have dinner with us. And so we're talking, you know, and he's like, "How do libertarians get, you know, how can they get behind Trump? How can he get your votes?" And we just start talking about different libertarian issues, you know, the drug war, all kinds of stuff, monetary policy. And he's like, "Oh, President Trump's going to call you right now." And I was like, "What?" So he called me and we spoke for like 45 minutes and he was super nice, right? He's super nice and friendly. And he's just like, "You're not going to get the vote. You're not going to win. But Joe Jorgensen, she cost me the election in 2020. She got 5%. She did not get 5%, by the way. She did not get 5%. But it was, you know, it was like 1.2 to 1.3% of the vote. So I was like, well, you know, I'm the chair of another political party. I can't literally endorse you, put you on our ballot. You know, like, I don't have that authority. But I can tell you how to get the small L vote. And he's like, let's keep talking. So I flew down to Mar-a-Lago a couple of weeks later and had dinner with him. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole to go down. You know, what is dinner like with Donald Trump? He was very sweet in person and friendly, has a lot of charisma. So we talked about all kinds of stuff, right? Fentanyl, ending the Fed, you know, Hillary Clinton, just everything. And finally, he's like, you know, what do I do? Like, what's the thing? And Rick had told me before we met, he's like, the president's a deal maker. He's not a regular politician. Whatever the libertarians want, you need to make a big ask and don't be afraid to make it, because he might negotiate it with you. He might work it down, but you make your ask because he'll listen. And I thought, you know, what do we all want to see, right? Bitcoiners, libertarians, like conservatives, most of them, like, we want to see him in the Fed, but he can't do that. Like, it's not possible. That's an act of Congress. And I can't set him up for failure. I can't make an ask that he can't deliver on. Whatever I ask needs to be wrapped in emotional appeal. So we all like lose our minds and we're like, there's no way we cannot vote for him. And so I thought, he's got a free Ross Ulbricht. He can do it. He doesn't need anybody else to do it for him. It doesn't involve Congress, committees, none of that. Our people are going to go nuts. You know, he's our standard bearer, and it's going to change his life. Like, it's the only thing I can ask with seriousness as the number one ask. So I told him, this is like really surreal for me, because I hadn't run this by Ross. I hadn't run this by Lynn. I'd run this by no one, except my husband, who was just like, okay, you know, like, we're like, what do you ask? You know? So I told him, I think if you come to our convention, which was another thing he wanted to do, come speak at our nominating convention for our presidential candidate. I was like, all right, you know, maybe political suicide for me. We'll see. But I think if you come to our convention and you walk out on stage and you say, you're going to free Ross Ulbricht, everybody will lose their minds. They will scream. They will vote for you. And the Bitcoiners will vote for you. And they have money, and they'll give you their money. And he went, who's Ross Ulbricht? I'll do it. I'll free him. I love freeing people. I'll walk out on stage and I'll say, free Ross Ulbricht, mic drop. And I just, like, it was that easy. I mean, it was like, you know, I'd spent, you know, a long time campaigning, take over the National Libertarian Party. The Mises Caucus put in, like, I don't know, 5 years of hard work to totally like reform the delegate situation, all the state affiliates, a ton of work went into it. But then I get there and I make the ask and he's just like, yep, I don't know who he is, but you got it.
Is that a little frightening that he just didn't know who he was, though? I mean, with all of this, you know,
I think he said, I love freeing people. And we talked about who Ross was, right? And I kind of jogged his memory, and it turned like, and then later in the conversation, he's like, oh, I think I do remember him. I think he was in a list of pardons that was supposed to make it to my desk the last day that I was in office. But that horrible, horrible Attorney General Barr, he slow walked it all, and a horrible person, didn't get anything done. And because Rick kind of nudged him and was like, I think that you were going to pardon him. So I don't think he was super familiar, but it was on a list of approved pardons, which also really shows you just like how evil some of those people in his first administration were, like interlopers who just hated the president and his agenda.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems to be that way. What kind of, I guess, similarities and differences do you see between, you know, with what Ross Ulbricht was going through and, you know, what the Samurai developers are going through right now?
I mean, it's similar. Like, you have the Southern District of New York, which, by the way, when I was having dinner with President Trump, he was a few minutes late because he was testifying in trial in New York, and he flew like straight down to have dinner with me. So, you know, you have the same like radicalized political activist branch of the district of the judicial system going after people. And they're basically like they're setting a precedent and they're firing a warning shot. You know, with Ross, it was like they were firing a shot at all of Bitcoin. And here they're like, okay, well, we know, you know, Bitcoin's here to stay, but anybody who's trying to innovate, you're trying to make, you know, technological advances, financial privacy, do anything creative, like don't do it, because we're going to come after you and we're going to smear you and say that you helped a terrorist or you did this or someone horrible used your tool. Like, it's very similar.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess with that, right, I mean, obviously, you know, we don't know the decision yet. By the time this podcast comes out, we might know, we might not. Where do you see, I guess, this swinging if we don't get a pardon before these guys go to jail? Is that going to be, you know, potentially a huge negative for the Trump administration, I guess, in the eyes of the Libertarian Party? And then on the flip side of things, if they do get pardoned before they, you know, go to jail here in the next couple of days, would that be, you know, I guess, in good faith, I guess, kind of similar to the move you saw or the move that everybody saw from Trump pardoning Ross Ulbricht?
I mean, I think it'll be tough if that pardon doesn't come down first. I think a lot of people are going to be really disappointed. I think at the same time, the administration understands how significant it is to the community and also from a midterm perspective, you know, not to be like calloused and calculating, but like they need the support and they know that. And some of the conversations I've had with higher ups in the administration.
What if I told you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
You know, not to be like calloused and calculating, but like they need the support and they know that. And some of the conversations I've had with higher ups in the administration, while they haven't like confirmed like 100% yes, it's happening, they've been very friendly and positive to me when I've asked about it. And I take that as a good sign, because ultimately, like, they don't get to sign it, even if they're telling the president, hey, you should do this. Like, it is up. The president is the only one who can do it. But it sounds like the people around him are on board.
Okay, so that is at least an encouraging sign. And I have seen like rumblings on Twitter that, or I guess X now, that people close to Trump have contacted him or let him know about this. Yep. I guess we're making enough noise as a Bitcoin community as it stands. But, you know, with all of this, the connection into Bitcoin and politics, do you see this, I guess, like more as like a, I guess, how do you view Bitcoin when it comes to the policies? Because, you know, you brought it up earlier when you were talking to Trump, saying that the Bitcoiners would get behind the Trump administration. They've got money. You know, I guess, how are the political parties viewing it? Because it seems like they've been very apprehensive before this recent Trump administration had gotten in.
Well, yeah, I mean, Democrats, like at least the Democratic Party, like the regime, they hate it. I think that the GOP are going to be very slow adopters, and there are going to be people within the GOP who still hate it, you know, but the younger generations don't. The Libertarian Party is like super friendly to Bitcoin. In fact, you can donate to the LP in Bitcoin, or I think they take a handful of cryptocurrencies as well. You know, my advice to Bitcoiners is, when it comes to political activism, you should keep doing what you're doing, because it is the most effective political activism, just doing Bitcoin and making ways for people to, like, off ramp, you know. But you also have to play defense sometimes, and you have to advance your own agenda. And to the extent that you need to do that, you have to pop up maybe twice a year and get politically involved, whether that's advocating for pardons, voting in the midterms, you know, selectively. I get a lot of Bitcoiners are non-voters, but, you know, maybe twice a year you have to kind of hold your nose and get involved. And essentially, you have to sort of defend your right to disengage, because places like the Southern District of New York, like, they're financially ruby ridging you right now. You know, you retreat, you say, I disengage from the system, and they say, well, that's fine. We'll come after you and we'll ruin your life anyway. And so that's why I think that it's important for you to become politically engaged, even if it's just a little bit.
Yeah. And it seems like that's, you know, starting to make its way into all different, you know, I guess, mm-hmm. levels of politics. Not only, you know, obviously we've got Trump and the VPs, but it seems like state levels all over. But it seems like some states are very resistant. You know, why do you think that is, you know, like the state of New York is one that is, you know, it's very difficult to buy Bitcoin there. I know a lot of Bitcoin companies that allow you to buy Bitcoin, like Strike, you're unable to get in the state of yep. New York. So why are, you know, I guess some states just so apprehensive, for this, and what makes the different regulations in the states, like, I guess, so difficult?
Well, they hate freedom. Like, I mean, it's not to sound hyperbolic, but it's a completely, like, they want a different culture. They're not into 1776. They're into 1984. They want you to comply. They want you to do whatever they want you to do. Like, just follow your marching orders. They don't want you to think critically. Like, they just want you to follow their agenda. And Bitcoin is, like, super not their agenda, you know? Like, it's really, I think it's really about control. And if they can't control you financially, you know, then you're an enemy, essentially. And also, like, how does that work for unbanking and social credit systems and that whole thing, which, you know, they desperately want to implement? It hurts it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the state of New York is very interesting, I think, especially right now with obviously the mayoral candidate, you know, socialist, and he's just come out and basically saying all these various socialist policies that he wants to implement, especially, like, you know, government run grocery stores, all of these different tactics that nuts. He wants to start to implement. I guess, how has New York gotten to such a almost Orwellian state to this point? And, you know, essentially, you know, getting so far away from what the, you know, the United States was yep. founded on.
Yeah. I mean, the GOP has made some tactical errors over the last decade, for sure. There's a lot of criticisms that can be leveled at Giuliani, but he cleaned up New York City. And I was just there for a big event in PubKey, which is an amazing place. But New York City is kind of scary now. And, you know, I think Mamdani got elected because people are so sick of everything being so expensive. And if you're not super economically literate, you're not into Austrian economics, Bitcoin, all that good stuff, like, you don't know. You hear someone with a viral campaign and polished social media presence say that they hear that you're hurting, you know, that your rent and groceries are too high, and they're like, I'm gonna vote for that guy. That's not good, you know, it's not good. And it just sort of snowballs, you know, all of these very, very far left, heavily populated states are huge welfare states, and it attracts more and more people. I mean, I used to live in LA, you know, the homeless population grows and grows because people go there to be homeless. The weather's beautiful and you can get handouts, you know, $900 a month. It's like, that's pretty good if you're already committed to being homeless. And they vote. New York is the same, but it's bigger, you know, it's a bigger population.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And I'm curious, you know, obviously seeing all these developments here, Trump's been in office for, you know, less than a year at this point, but how would you kind of describe the overall, I guess, state of the U.S. right now?
I mean, I think we're in a cold war with the left, you know, and when I say we, I mean people who are like not the far left, people who are center left, people who are far right, people who are libertarians, conservative Bitcoiners. I feel like we're all sort of in this cold war with the left, and it's kind of discouraging, you know?
Yeah. So then let's dive into that. Like, what do you mean by this cold war with the far left? What is their end goal, you think?
I think that they want the United States to adopt like globalist socialism. And we really do live in two different realities at this point. You know, like when Robert F. Kennedy Jr. did some incredible work recently and altered the vaccine schedule to take like the Hep B vaccine out of recommended vaccines for infants, there are states that were like, oh no, you know what? We're going to have our own, for the first time in a long time, we're going to have our own recommendations. We're leaving it on the list. We're defying RFK Jr.'s recommendation. That would have been unheard of under Biden. You know, unheard of. They are at war with our lifestyle, you know, and they're not, you know, shooting at us, at least in large groups. You know, there's individuals who are shooting. There's no collective call to overt violence yet. But, you know, it's like a cold war. We're at a standoff. We're diverging, I think, on two different paths.
Now, do you think the Trump administration is doing, a good job in allowing us to, I guess, keep their freedoms? And then, you know, I guess to parlay off of that, how do you see, RFK's now integration into this Trump admin as, you know, coming from the Libertarian Party?
I mean, he's doing an incredible job. I think like Kennedy is just one of the shining stars in the admin right now. We worked pretty closely with him, the Libertarian Party, because we entered into what's called a joint fundraising agreement with him, which essentially allowed him to take larger donations as a presidential candidate. Because when you run as an independent, you can take like $3,000. And if you have a political party, then it opens it up quite a bit. Even though he wasn't our candidate, we went into that arrangement with him. It was very financially beneficial to all parties involved. So we sort of like take extra pride in his work because we're like, hey, you know, we helped do that. I think that the gains made in HHS are incredible. I think Secretary Bessent is doing a good job too. I think Tulsi Gabbard's doing an incredible job, even though you don't hear a lot about it on social media right now. Like she has a hard job. Because she's got to do the stuff where you wonder, you know, if there's a changing of the guards in the future, are they going to come after her? You know, like how they came after President Trump, because she's exposing so many of the things they did. I think, you know, what I told the libertarians when Donald Trump was, you know, running and making all these promises, I was like, this is not going to be a fully libertarian administration. So you need to set your expectations accordingly. If we gain a little bit of ground, it will be the first time in a very long time that liberty has gained any ground. And I think that that's true. The way that I would phrase it is that this is for the first time in, I don't know, over 100 years since, you know, the founding of the Federal Reserve, the tide has turned. And I don't think people recognize how significant and truly difficult it is. And so it's like, you know, we've gained maybe just a little bit of ground, but we actually stopped and halted and changed the course of the country. And I think that is the hardest thing to do. You know, we moved away from COVID tyranny. We went in the opposite direction. The president said, we're going to free Ross Ulbricht. It doesn't matter what the former administration said, you know, the way that they've smeared him, and we're going to be friendly to Bitcoin. That's never happened before. So to that extent, like, I'm really optimistic and I'm just grateful for the progress we have.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been, you know, I guess the flip side of things would have been pretty detrimental, to say the very least. But I guess, yep. You know, Do you think that, you know, we, I guess without what we saw for, you know, 4 or 5 years ago now at this point with, you know, COVID and all of the tyranny that came from that.
Last bull run, we had exchanges blow up. You saw FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name it. But the true power of Bitcoin is getting it off an exchange into cold storage. This bull run, I'm trusting Trezor, the company that's been around for over a decade, and they just had a brand new release of the best hardware wallet in the game, the Trezor Safe 7. It's got the first audible secure element. No other hardware wallet has this. On top of it, I travel a lot, so I need an easy way to connect my Bitcoin hardware wallet to my laptop, phone, what have you. Therefore, it is the easiest way and has the best connectivity to access your Bitcoin. This is truly how you become your own bank, and the best way to do that is with a Trezor Safe 7. So you could go to the affiliate link down below and get yourself one right now, and do it quickly because they are flying off the shelves, folks. So do it with the easiest and best way to get your Bitcoin off exchanges. So go to the affiliate link down below, get yourself a Trezor Safe 7, and get your Bitcoin off exchanges in the easiest way possible. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
You know, I guess without what we saw for, you know, 4 or 5 years ago now at this point with, you know, COVID and all of the tyranny that came from that, do you think we would be, I guess, where the pendulum would have swung as much back to where we are right now? Or was that, I guess, almost a little kick in the tail that we needed?
I mean, I guess it was the kick in the tail we needed. It's really hard to wish that on us, you know? Mm-hmm. I guess the silver lining is that we got motivated and a lot of people were woken up to what was going on.
Yeah, because I mean, I think, you know, from my, I guess just my friends and, you know, even people outside I know out of Bitcoin, you know, I was living in Florida at the time, which obviously was the, you know, the most open state, but yeah. It seemed like, you know, a lot of people that I met and became friends with at that time were moving from states like New York or, you know, heavy states that were locked down and kind of coming down to Florida. And then now they never want to leave. And they were just like, that was the most ridiculous thing ever. So I think it really opened a lot of people's eyes. Unfortunately, we had to have something like that. But I do think that it was like a positive for people kind of looking forward, or I guess demanding our freedoms more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think RFK kind of speaking out in his rise with the MAHA movement and everything else, I think kind of opened people's eyes to the libertarian movement as well. I guess, how do you see the Libertarian Party like continuing to develop as, you know, as we're going through this administration and kind of going out into projecting a little bit into the future? Do you see them trying to embrace things like Bitcoin more? You know, what kind of, movements do you see? Maybe not movements is the best word, but the path forward for the Libertarian Party, how would you line it out?
I mean, they need to stick to the wins that they gained under my administration. And, you know, that's up to them. Like, they're very friendly to Bitcoin, but they have to understand that the gains with Bitcoin are going to continue to be made through coalitions with people friendly in the GOP. Mostly. And if someone who's a Democrat is friendly, that's great too. You know, like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he was not a GOP party member, and he was very friendly to Bitcoin. But you can't be insulated. You know, one of the problems with the Libertarian Party, one of the reasons I made this big push with the Mises Caucus to take over leadership is because it essentially acted like a model UN club, you know, like for decades. They didn't advance liberty. And so if you want to advance liberty, you got to work outside your bubble. You know, you got to shake hands with people that you're maybe running against or in a different political party. But ultimately, you know, like that'll be up to them to decide what they want to do next.
Yeah. And so, I guess it brings us into the Mises Caucus here because, obviously the Mises Institute, they're very, you know, big with the education, especially in Austrian economics. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, different areas there. I've got some great friends down in Tampa that run the Mises Institute down there. They put on great events and a lot of education. Do you think we're going to get to a point where, you know, we could potentially see the ending of the Fed in our lifetime? Because I know you brought it up a little bit here earlier. Do you think that that's somewhat feasible to get through at this
point? I mean, maybe towards the end of our lifetimes. I mean, you had Vivek Ramaswamy running for president, and he's like a hardcore Mises Institute, you know, economically literate, small L libertarian. I think the only time he'd even voted before was for Gary Johnson. Like he's in these people, libertarians are, it's kind of like it's starting to come into, I don't know, what's a good way to phrase it? Like it's our time, you know? And I think the ideas are just difficult to contain, you know, they spread like wildfire and with the right spokesperson, you know, maybe anything's possible.
Yeah, it definitely seems like these ideas are getting more popular. I mean, we're seeing, you know, things go viral about, you know, the Federal Reserve, dating back to, you know, obviously Creature of Jekyll Island, all of these different things like becoming just more publicized, not only just in the Bitcoin space, but I think just like more people in general are waking up. So it seems like there is a lot of momentum, you know, in that movement. And I'm curious, like what are you seeing as the development here? And how do you see, I guess this, you know, you working with the Mises Caucus here continuing to play out? Like what do you think is next? And what are you aiming to continue to develop as being the chair of the Mises Caucus?
Yeah. So, well, we're recruiting. Bitcoiners and Maha people really specifically to join the caucus and help us keep the Libertarian Party focused on wins, you know, focused on advancing like RFK Jr.'s agenda and Bitcoin specifically, sound economic policy, making sure that we can do what we want to do, you know, with Bitcoin, that we have financial freedom. And what we'd like to do is to see the party play kingmaker in the future for 2028, nominate a Bitcoin and Maha POTUS and VPOTUS candidate, send them to negotiate with a GOP candidate who, you know, hopefully would be JD Vance or someone else who's been super friendly to our communities, get concessions, major concessions, and drop out and endorse. And just repeat it, right? Again and again. You don't have to, like, not every candidate in the Libertarian Party needs to do that. We just need significant ones, right? Like, if there's going to be a handful of hotly contested races in swing states and the presidential race, get your concessions and drop out. And that's how we can make actual advances. Like, use the party as an effective tool. And then also don't burn yourself out on a ton of Libertarian Party activism, right? Like, do a few things every year and then just continue to do what you do, because like the Bitcoin and Maha activism is important. So that's really our pitch, you know, for why we want people to join the Mises Caucus. We want to take what you're doing and sort of stack the Libertarian Party's ballot access behind you so that you have, you know, more firepower when it comes to the midterms and the presidential election.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, with the, you know, I guess adding that firepower, obviously it would be very valuable to I guess either candidate at this point, right? Either party. So it seems like, you know, at this point, you know, maybe we'll get the Democratic Party to at least not swing as far left, but I guess, you know, anything is possible at this point in time. But as you see this, like that, the economic policies kind of, I guess, starting to play out, do you see the shift getting towards Austrian economics anytime soon?
I see it in cabinet members. I have a small number of acquaintances and friends who are in Congress and the Senate, you know, and with the exception of them, like, I don't see anything impressive coming out of Congress. I have like zero hope in Congress. But when you have economically literate people running the Office of Management and Budget, like Russ, who does an amazing job, Secretary Bessent, like when you have intelligent people in cabinet positions, they can do some really incredible stuff. So that's my hope.
Yeah, it seems like that's going to be, I guess, I don't know. I feel like that's a little bit more far-fetched of an idea, at least the way that things are going right now. But you know, maybe something drastic with the amount of inflation and kind of the monetary policy that we're seeing right now, maybe that'll open the eyes of some members, because it does seem like, you know, we're getting some people to I guess talk about inflation, or like at least point the fingers at that. And it seems like there's a lot of stress around the monetary policy. Are you noticing, yeah, I guess, more stress around that, I guess, comparatively to maybe, you know, 4 to 8 years ago?
Yeah, people are talking about it a lot more. And I think that's a good thing. You know, people are starting to understand that inflation is not good. Inflation is not caused by evil corporations. It's not how this works. It's caused by government. It's caused by printing money. I think more people are starting to understand that. I mean, like, I know that in the 90s and early 2000s, that was not the narrative. So I'm optimistic about that.
Yeah, it definitely seems like, you know, it. I'll be optimistic, I guess, about it here going forward. But I mean, the low interest rate environment, kind of his pushing of Powell, trying to get that lower. I mean, it just, to me, it always seems like there's something that could go, I guess, a little awry here, where we could have essentially like inflation or an asset bubble, to say the least. And I think that, you know, in the short term, it would almost be viewed as a positive, because people look at the S&P 500 as a, you know, a mark of how the economy is doing. They look at, and I think Trump kind of has a feeling that the younger generation looks at how Bitcoin's doing to get a grasp on the younger market. Would you say that's fair to say?
I think that's probably pretty accurate.
Okay.
The younger generation, like, they're so far removed from like the stock market. Like, they don't even have a concept of savings, I don't think. I think it's just like literally whatever's in your bank account is what you have in that moment. And it is completely like, people in their 20s, like, I don't know, I can't even relate to it. It's totally different.
Yeah. I mean, it's the younger generation really did seem to get behind the Trump admin, though. And it seems like that's been kind of a big shift. Why do you think that the younger generation has kind of shifted over that way? And even, you know, I'm starting to see the younger generation start to get to more libertarian policies and kind of align with, you know, the MAHA movement as well. You see,
one of my absolute favorite things about Bitcoin is meeting all of you in person. So mark your calendars for February 28th and come down to where I've called home for the past 8 years, Tampa, Florida. The Bitcoin Bay Foundation is putting on the Sound Money Soiree. It's the third annual. It's a night of Bitcoin, poker, an open bar, and a silent auction. All support will go to Bitcoin Bay, a nonprofit that is creating a circular economy down in Tampa Bay, Florida. They're doing absolutely great things, and it's the Bitcoin community that I've called home for such a long time, and these guys are absolutely crushing it. So please do anything you can to support. Buy your tickets today. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE to get 10% off your Sound Money Soiree tickets.
So do you know anything about Bitcoin?
No.
You guys can come down and see this ugly mug. Come boogie on the dance floor, shake it, and now that Bitcoin's over 100K, you can do it all with your girlfriends. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
Shifted over that way. And even, you know, I'm starting to see the younger generation start to get to more libertarian policies and kind of align with, you know, the MAHA movement as well. You see, you know, the diets, you see the kids on Instagram and TikTok with the boards of steak and eggs and everything like that, which I feel like is kind of like a layover from RFK. So I guess, why do you think the younger generation, but, you know, I guess maybe 10, 15 years ago had always been the far left, has kind of seen this shift?
Well, I think that young men in particular, because I think there's still a pretty big difference politically between Gen Z and Gen women. But I think that Gen Z men are just really sick of being told they suck, you know, and they're becoming immune to it. Yeah, you know, they're becoming immune to being told that they're bad because they're white people, or they're bad because they're men, or they're bad because they're Americans. And they're just like, it It's like you could just like throw it and it just bounces right off. And so I think that they're just going to be more open-minded. I think the millennial woke scold is just exhausting to them and not how they want to live their lives, which is good, you know, and I hope that the Gen Z women that it catches up. But I think there's going to be like a pretty intense right-wing backlash to some of the policies socially and culturally that we've seen over the last like 15 years.
What do you mean by that?
I think that we are maybe a little bit more in danger of like aggressive nationalism, you know, like kind of scary, the darker side of the right wing popping up in younger generations.
Okay. Yeah. Let's keep diving. Like, okay. Cause I mean, I do think that there is an element of that, right? I mean, we've seen the dark side of the left. And I think like, you know, at a certain point, getting too far on one side is detrimental.
Yeah.
And you know, it's probably a little bit better to be a little bit closer to the middle, much less than I guess people would argue here. But it seems like the reason why the Democratic Party has lost is because they swung so far left. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's just historically what always seems to happen is somebody swings a little bit too far. So people kind of go back to the other side because it's almost forced at that point.
It's a pendulum swing, you know, and I just hope that we don't swing, you know, into like Nazi territory, really. Like I want to swing back towards freedom. You know, I don't want to be politically motivated by revenge. I think that some of the things that Fauci did, like those people need to meet justice. But I don't want to seek revenge on other Americans because I just don't think that's a good way to live, and it's not a good model for how to run a country.
Yeah, I mean I agree 100%. And you know, it's interesting, especially you've seemingly been in this fight for freedom for nearly a decade. How would you categorize the status of it? Do you think we're winning or losing that war?
I just think that for the first time we've turned the tide. And so I'm just very optimistic, you know, because you're used to just sort of like fighting really hard so that you lose less. And it's like, we just started to win a little bit. So I know that so many people are so politically fatigued. And what I want to tell you is like, don't just throw in the towel, take a little break, you know, take a breather, but don't throw in the towel because we just started winning. Like, I'm sorry it took so long for us to just start winning, but like cheer up and be happy because things are looking up, even though you're tired, you know, like stick with it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think things are trending in the right direction. But what would you say would need to be the biggest thing for us to get to like a full on, you know, free state where, you know, if everything that you would, I guess, could foresee or could want out of this admin in the next 3 years, what would some of those things look like?
Okay, so we need a candidate who will go to bat for us, right, and get major concessions. We want to keep HHS. Let's take another cabinet position. What can we take? You know, I know that people want peaceful foreign policy. You don't get that if you don't go to the negotiating table and fight for it. I think we could probably start seeing that. I think we need to get rid of a lot of spending. And if we continue to find and eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse, especially on things like Social Security and Medicare, you know, like there are people who are doing Medicaid, I think it's just Medicaid auditing right now, and the waste is in the billions. Like, for example, if we continue to find people who are bringing in six-figure incomes but also cashing in on Medicaid to get free prescriptions, like if we start knocking all of that stuff out, like we're going to be in a much better place financially as a country. Because I know that people are very worried like about the national debt, you know, so we have to just stop. We have to get rid of as much spending as possible. And that's the easiest place to start.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, just based on the numbers, right? I mean, I think since the year 2000, we've brought in more tax dollars every single presidency than the previous one. So it's always increased, but yet the debt just seems to be spiraling out of control. So it's like, you know, the government just has a spending problem at this point, and it's not necessarily an income problem, even though they always pitch, hey, let's bring in more tax dollars to help pay off this debt. So I guess... you know, what, how did you view, I guess, this whole Doge situation? Because, you know, I'm not super deep into the weeds of all of it, but it seemed like that was the initial thought, was we were going to lower a lot of this governmental spending. You know, Elon was in there for, it seemed like just a couple of weeks, and then, you know, that disappeared, and then now that whole cabinet is non-existent. So, well, it was something that just kind of was a flash in the pan.
It was supposed to sunset. So that was normal. It was only supposed to last for about 6 months, and it did. They discovered a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse. But it's the Office of Management and Budget that started zeroing things out. So USAID, the way that was killed was through OMB. And so I know people were very disillusioned and they were upset about Doge and they wanted to see more happen, but things did happen. Like, they found it, and instead of Congress, you know, which at this point, when people tell me they're running for Congress, I'm like, oh, that's adorable. You know, like, whatever. Like, Congress is not going to do anything. And I think that when people were upset about Doge and all that, like, direct your frustration at Congress, but also be realistic. They'll never do anything. There's 435 of them, and 90% of them are like legit psychopaths. Don't, like, just let that go. It all happens in the cabinets with the cabinet secretaries. And in the Office of Management and Budget, they implemented just this really simple thing, which is, okay, you want money, and it's fine, it's budgeted, you know, you'll get it. Just tell us what it's for and give us the spending code. And all of a sudden, like, people stopped requesting money, and the spending stopped because people wouldn't say what they wanted their money for. And they couldn't fill in a government code because they're cheating. It's not like a real thing. That's like the USAID thing. And there's many other things just like it. Like, people just know how to get money and request it. And they're like, oh, okay, no problem. What's it for? It's just like crickets. So that's still happening. You know, OMB is doing a great job. And that's where a lot of the Doge stuff is going on. So anyway, like, I understand people were frustrated and disillusioned. But just remember, a lot of really awesome things happen, and you just don't hear about it on social media.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, if you go into like U.S. debt clock, I don't know if it's still there, but it did have like a Doge saving area. And now they have it. Yeah, they switched it to like tariff revenue now, which is, I think, always kind of interesting. But, you know, I think, you know, it is. Yeah, I mean, obviously, social media, we get things done, and then, you know, you kind of forget about it after like 2 days or something like that, because of the way information spreads so quickly. You know, getting, I guess, back to a little bit of what we've got here in the next few days with the Samurai guys, and, you know, some of the freedom movements, it seems like obviously that's been big for, or like the Bitcoiners are kind of rallying behind them. And hopefully the admin does the right thing and pardons them. But it seems like this isn't an ending attack. There's a few more, you know, potential cases here. I know we were talking a little bit pre-show about Ian and Roman Sterlingov. If you want to kind of detail what's going on with them, and is there any chance that you see them potentially getting pardoned?
Yeah, pardon applications have been submitted for both of them. So Ian Freeman is serving time for operating an unlicensed Bitcoin ATM, essentially, which is ridiculous. And that's a rule that's very selectively enforced, and it's unclear whether or not it needs to be enforced since the statute doesn't refer to Bitcoin as funds.
Why would you ever hold generational wealth on a piece of paper? It doesn't make sense. You need a foolproof solution, and I've got it for you. You could get this as low as $25, and if you use promo code GreenCandle, you could get 10% off. Being around for 12 years, they've engineered the perfect and most easy to use solution. I've partnered with CryptoSteel to offer for you guys just that. It is the cheapest and most secure way to store your seed phrase. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have too many things where I think one ton is going to fall on this, but it could survive all of that and more. So go to CryptoSteel.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle. You can get 10% off your entire order if you go there today. So go ahead and protect your generational wealth and do it with CryptoSteel. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
And that's a rule that's very selectively enforced, and it's unclear whether or not it needs to be enforced since the statute doesn't refer to Bitcoin as funds. He was just essentially a really prominent freedom activist in New Hampshire who was passionate about getting people to adopt Bitcoin. He ran Bitcoin ATMs. He was locked up because some people ran scams on his ATMs. He had better know your customer rules than any major financial institution and actually stopped people from getting scammed. But they just want to make an example out of him. And the feds just hated him because he was, you know, a prominent liberty activist in his area. So we're really hoping that he will be home with his family for the holidays. Same with Roman Sterlingov, who was accused of creating the Bitcoin fog mixer, which his attorney says he didn't even do. Like, not only should it not be a crime to create a Bitcoin mixer, but he used it once. And the feds were just, they were so bad at their jobs. They used this tool, Chainalysis, that they couldn't even figure out who made it. And they just found one person who had made a transaction. And they said, well, then you must be the architect of it all. So, you know, they're both serving time, which is terrible. I'm in communication with them both, and I'm just hoping they can be freed.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, I guess, is this kind of, I guess, a layover case from the previous admin?
There are always cases from the Biden administration, you know, with the exception of Ross. Like, it's all Biden DOJ. It's all Biden DOJ. And I know that, you know, like the pardon attorney's office under President Trump, they've done a fantastic job. They're aware of all these cases. It's just a matter of like getting them in front of the president. And, you know, not everybody in the DOJ is on board with President Trump's agenda. As we know, Southern District of New York, not on board. They don't want to comply with the Blanche memo. They're like, oh, whatever, you know, catch us if you can. We're going to do what we want to do. And it's challenging sometimes to fire some of these federal employees. So, you know, a lot of work, I think a lot of work still with regards to the federal staffing issues, but the federal workforce has shrunk like considerably under Trump. So I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. So I guess, would there be, an ultimate goal that you think with through these, not only like through these pardons, but bringing so much attention and eyes to these different things? Obviously we've got new technology in the Bitcoin space, just rapidly, ingraining itself in society, but also with the implementation of AI and all of these different things, just seems like the technological spaces are just changing at such a rapid pace. Is there anything that, you would like to see passed, whether it's through law or something along those lines that could help avoid some of these wrongful convictions? Or is this just a layover effect of just a poor, system that we have?
I mean, ideally, we codify protections for Bitcoiners and people who are writing code, you know, because we don't want Bitcoin miners going to be on the hook in the future. You know, like it's not a good precedent to see software developers locked up. Free speech covers code writing. It's typing. It's characters on a keyboard. And I don't think that really should need to be clarified, but apparently we need to clarify something in the statute, you know, and if we can't get that because Congress, you know, having President Trump making an executive order, codifying the Blanche memo in some way, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like they just need to essentially just accept for code as free speech at this point, because it's, yeah. I mean, this is why I think, you know, that there's the meme in the Bitcoin space, but everybody's, you know, the shadowy super coder, you know, like kind of saying that they're hiding in their basement because they're afraid to essentially come out and say that they're building these different protocols. And then it makes it difficult for people to, you know, raise money, start companies, all of these different things. And I think it's just kind of a hurting the ecosystem. Positive, not only like president's, the administration now being friendly to this industry, but this would be just absolutely massive and hopefully would change, the perception. So I mean, I think definitely these pardons are one step, but I'm curious, if you were to project out in 5 years from now, where do you see yourself and where do you see this liberty movement as we're like sitting here talking today? Like, where do you see this projecting out? Because I mean, you were lining out, you do think that there's greener pastures ahead. Obviously, we're all kind of tired from this freedom.
I know.
Does seem like a brighter future. So I'm curious where you think we'll be in like 5 years or so.
I mean, I'll be either probably working with the administration or, you know, somewhere in the industry or at home homeschooling my kids. You know, I have one, I'd like to have one more. I think if we continue to work, we are going to have a place in this administration and the next one, God willing, if it's J.D. Vance or someone similar to him. And, you know, also if the Trump kids continue to work on their crypto and Bitcoin projects, you know, like Bitcoin's going to be in a good place. And I know that sometimes the Trump kids get some shade for the things that they're working on. But I got to say, like, it's good that they're doing it because it's like built-in protections and guardrails for the rest of us. Like, I want people close to President Trump doing Bitcoin, doing crypto, you know, because then it's always going to be at the forefront of his mind.
Yeah, definitely seems like that's trending in that direction. Obviously, we've got, you know, the two Trump kids having an American Bitcoin company. You know, obviously, his younger son is very into it as well. So I think that there is some brighter futures here, at least for the Bitcoin space. It seems like we're over that hump, at least initially. Obviously, things can change here very quickly. But what can the people in the audience do to, I guess, help your cause and help potentially, you know, I guess help with some of these pardons? Obviously, we got the Free Samurai petitions that I could put in the bio or the show notes here. But what are some other things that people can do to help spread the word?
Please also support Ian Freeman and Roman Sterlingov. Ian's petition is freeiannow.org and Roman Sterlingov's is freeroman.org. Roman Storm. Two Romans, you know, who has not been sentenced yet and, you know, God willing, won't be sentenced. His petition is, or his website is freeromannow.org, I believe. That's another one. You know, he's not in hot water yet, but he's got, I think his next court appearance is January 17th. So support all of them, because when we link arms, we are stronger. I'm advocating, like, I'm so grateful that the Samurai wallet cases have gotten so much media attention because it just makes it easier for everyone else. And be loud about it on social media. And if we get these pardons, like, please show up in the midterms in elections where it matters, swing votes, you know, swing states. Even if you have to hold your nose and vote for someone in the GOP you don't like if President Trump delivers for you, we need to deliver for him.
Awesome stuff. Well, I'll link all that stuff in the show notes. And Angela, where else can people find out about you as well and help support you?
Oh, yeah. I'm on Twitter at Real Angela Mack. And if you want to support the work I'm doing, you can go to lpmisescaucus.com. Please sign up, donate. We do have a handful of paid staffers. And you can find out about the other good work we're doing, like Supreme Court civil asset forfeiture briefs, all kinds of good stuff.
Awesome stuff. I'll put all that in the show notes. Be sure to support and help out where you guys can. So Angela, thank you so much for the work that you do. And thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys all for tuning into another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them and I'll see you guys all at the next one.